Geekville Radio.
All right, Geekville Radio fans, geeks and geekettes, children of all ages, this is Geekville Radio coming at you with a complete look at DC fandom. We're dedicating this episode almost entirely to DC fandom that happened over the past weekend, specifically on Saturday, August 22nd, in the year of our Lord, 2020. We're going to talk Wonder Woman. We're going to talk Batman, Gotham Knights, some Suicide Squad, Zack Snyder Cut, and we'll wind it up with some Batman and Black Adam talk. Fortunately, I don't have to do it alone. Joining me once again from a nice, soft, padded cell in South Kakalaki, which is, I'm assuming, is a lot warmer where I am, Crazy Train Jonathan Bullock.
All aboard, ladies and gentlemen. It actually is fairly cool for this time of year here in South Carolina. Cool for late August in South Carolina is like 85, 88 degrees. It's still warm where you would be. But I don't know why that is. Maybe it's the two hurricanes off the coast. It's 2020. Why not? Why not two hurricanes at one time? That's a little far for us. But regardless, it just means we'll get an Indian summer the first week of October and it'll get back up in the 90s. But it is what it is.
Whoever had dual hurricanes on their 2020 bingo death card, they're probably winning.
What happened to Murder Hornets? They just kind of went
by. Yeah,
they
just kind of went away. I don't know. So, but then there was that asteroid.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it is. At last, I heard that they're still predicted that the super volcano underneath Yellowstone National is supposed to erupt. That would be a planet killer. So, what the heck? You know.
Okay, roll your dice. So, anyway, how much of DC fandom did you see? Because I was really impressed with the presentation of it.
I watched a lot of clips on YouTube, which I know is weird because I'm the DC guy and you're the Marvel guy and you watched it. Full transparency for our listeners. We had, I think I brought this up last episode. We had a really, really big audit. The first big type audit we've had at my job since the lockdown. And all the paperwork was due. As we record, this is a Tuesday night. It's due on Thursday. I actually worked some this weekend, so it's been a crazy couple of weeks for me. We just came out of our every 3 year certification process. So as soon as that gets done, I had to hop right on this new audit. So I have really been working a lot and a lot of strange hours. So I've just picked up stuff here and there where I could on YouTube and things like that.
Well, I guess we'll kick it off. We'll go chronologically here. So we'll kick it off with Wonder Woman. And there was that panel, but I mean, let's face it, the main thing people want to see is the trailer. And sure, the main things I drew off the trailer is there was previous speculation that Chris Pine might be playing a descendant of Steve Trevor, much like how Lyle Wagner did, the late great Lyle Wagner in that, that 70s TV show. But that trailer clearly makes it look like this is a Steve Trevor who was plucked out of World War One and put into the 1980s. Right. And I don't know how they're going to do that. I want to get your input because I did hear input from one of my friends first, but I want to hear your thoughts on Steve Trevor. But first, let me say this, that there was the footage in the trailer of Diana using the lasso to swing from lightning bolts. I'm not quite sure how that works in science, but good gravy, it looked cool.
And yeah, it's a cool visual, and oh, it is magic, so
And we got footage of Cheetah in action, and let's face it, if Diana has any arch nemesis, it is probably Cheetah. And
that would be who most DC fans would tell you if you asked them.
Right, but I'm curious what you think of how a World War One era Steve Trevor fits into 1984.
I've heard a lot of different speculation and conspiracy theories on that. The one that I like the most is this idea based on this trailer and the trailer that came out previously that somehow Diana, probably through Maxwell Lord, because he's your main villain here, has manipulated Diana into wishing for something, or he's discovered some kind of power that allows you to make a wish, and her wish was for Steve to come back. And then obviously Cheetah's is to be cool because they show her off as a geek first, so she becomes cool. Maxwell Lord's, of course, is to have knowledge and power. So you can see how that could be a particular plot device they would use. The bad guy discovers some kind of whatever that allows you to make a wish. And that was the wish Diana had, was for Steve to be alive still. Other ones I've heard is that it's actually that he actually it's, there's going to be a twist and he's going to be a bad guy at the end. That it's all a mirage or an illusion, like mind control.
Well, that would still fit in with the first theory he had.
Mm-hmm. So any of those would work. I mean, I don't know. I am the DC guy, but I think I've brought it up enough in our discussions about the Flareverse. They do lean a lot on the multiverse concepts in DC a lot, and a lot with time travel and the Speed Force because of Barry or Wally or Jay or whoever it is at that time, whoever's the Flash at that particular time, right?
Right.
And that is one area of DC I go, would you stop it? It gets a little convoluted and sometimes can be headache inducing with all the jumping around.
Well, that's something we share because I'm a Marvel guy, and it seemed like every third Thursday it was like, oh, let's do another reboot.
Right, you know, so, right.
But the where I was going to go with the Steve Trevor is that there, I heard the theory that there was a concept that would all fall back to Maxwell Lord being the constructor of this,
the puppet master, so to speak,
exactly.
And on everybody's strings.
Pedro Pascal is playing Maxwell Lord, and I know that it's clearly there is a Trump parody going on there, which I don't get why you're doing that in 1984, but I don't want to get political. But props to Pedro Pascal, a fantastic babyface in The Mandalorian, and it looks like he's going to be a fantastic heel in Wonder Woman 1984.
Do we know if he's standing solo, or is Checkmate going to be involved?
Ah, that's a good question. So I guess we'll have to find out in a couple of months here.
I always saw Checkmate as essentially DC's answer to, and I don't know which one came first because they're always copying each other, to the Hellfire Club. That was always the way I always took it, maybe because of the chest analogy, but it's like Namor was before Aquaman, and many would say, well, Wonder Woman was before Captain Marvel. Batman was before Moon Knight. I think you're selling all those Marvel and DC properties short when you do that, but that's just my opinion.
Right, right, absolutely. So I think we'll all be there if theaters are actually open by October, where we can.
Now, what was it originally supposed to drop? I know it was one of those that got affected by the lockdown.
I think it was supposed to drop, I think it was early summer. I think it was one of those that was going to come May or June.
Late May, yeah. Early June type release date.
Right. So moving on, the Gotham Knights video game trailer. I mean, this blew my mind. I mean, because the opening moments of it, you essentially have Bruce Wayne revealing himself as Batman and saying that he bombed the Batcave, and then it's up to Nightwing, Robin, Red Hood, and Batgirl to take care of everything. Now, first off, I mean, was that trailer as mind-blowing to you as it was to me?
No, but the reason why is because I'm such a devotee of the Batman video games that they have been doing a lot of online stuff, and there's been a lot of leaked concepts and things that I've been following religiously since, 6 months after Arkham Knight came out. By that point, I think I played through that game's full story mode 3 times.
Yeah. You know? Well, original Arkham Asylum is one of the few games I can say I unlocked everything. I made it a point to go through and unlock everything. And for a game not named Galaga, that's impressive for me, I think.
No, that particular game in the franchise, which of course is the first, and let's be honest, probably changed the way video games were done. It was that groundbreaking.
I remember hearing an interview because there was Rob Paulsen, the voice actor, who's probably best known for Pinky and Yakko, but he interviewed Mark Hamill on his podcast. And I know I'm going to have to bleep myself here, but he said something to the effect of, Mark, you were fantastic in this game. And
he was.
Yeah. And Mark said it to the effect of, well, I was unhinged. I could say and do things that I couldn't do on an animated show. And I'm sure you can probably hear Mark's voice as I try to emulate what he said. That's what made it work. We had an R-rated Joker finally unleashed.
Right. And it didn't hurt. They had Paul Dini writing it. So he was leaning heavily on the Batman animated series, which I think is a fan favorite across all comic book fans. I still argue it might be the greatest animated comic book based television show ever. But I mean, there are those that will say X-Men, which is awesome.
Yeah.
It just has that theme song that gets stuck in your head. That's an earwig you can't get rid of for a couple days.
Well, even with Batman, it's like you had the Joker throwing explosive babies at people. That's
right,
sick.
Right.
I don't care what level that's on.
But it was, I think it's, there's been a lot that's leaked out on that game. So I probably wasn't as surprised as you. Like the big reveal for, and I'm not spoiling anything, is you can look at the trailer online. What has been teased for a very, very, very long time is this was going to involve the Court of Owls. And that was definitely the stinger at the end of the trailer. Of course, the Court of Owls is a fairly new bad guy for Batman in the comics, only the last 10, 12 years.
I think it started with New 52.
I believe you're correct. It's a cool concept. It's a concept that Gotham is essentially a cursed city and has been corrupt since it was founded back pre-Revolutionary War. And it's been so interwoven and intertwined that, even basic architecture in the city of Gotham, they've had control over for their purposes. And this is going side by side with the Elliots and the Waynes that were the good families that started Gotham, and the Cobblepots that were the bad families who started Gotham. They don't even know that the Court of Owls exists. So that's what's kind of cool.
And one thing to add on that with owls, it goes back to Owlman when we go into alternate realities and alternate Earths and stuff like that. Owls prey on bats.
Yep.
That's kind of convenient there, isn't it?
Exactly. But it was, so I did know that was coming because there's been a lot that has changed. People need to understand, they brought it up really well in the trailer. Yes, Warner Brothers owns DC and Batman, but two studios, development studios, developed the four Arkham games. And depending on who you talk to, the third game, chronologically, it's the first game, but release date, it was the third game, is Batman Arkham Origins. And it was the one game that didn't have Mark Hamill and did not have Kevin Conroy doing the voice work. It had,
It was Troy Baker for Joker. I remember that because I remember Joker, Mark Hamill saying something to the effect of, did I do this in one of my freaking blackout periods? Because this sounds just like me.
And I can't remember who did Batman. Was it? Oh, shoot. What? D. Bradley Baker. It was another one of those bigger video game voice actors. But Roger Craig Smith. That's who it was.
Okay.
Roger Craig Smith. He reprises his role. You hear his voice at the beginning of the trailer when the recorded message that Bruce has laid out. So same actor. But this game is developed by WB Montreal Games, which was the development studio that made Origins. And that's the one that's the real outlier in the original Arkham series, because it didn't have the original. It was a prequel. You had had Arkham Asylum, and then Arkham City is essentially like 2 years after that. And then Origins was a game that went back 10 years before Arkham, when Batman was young and just becoming a vigilante. And it's a very polarizing game in the Arkham community. I love it. I've played it again. I think that it does a lot of things. I understand the complaints, like some of the gadgets and abilities you didn't get until the second game, Arkham City, are available there, but you didn't have them in Arkham Asylum. So chronologically, it doesn't kind of make sense. But I'm fine with that. They are the ones that developed this game, and they're saying straight from the jump, this is not an Arkham canon. It's completely different, because spoilers, folks, for a game that's, 4 or 5 years old now, Bruce Wayne either dies or fakes his own death at the end of Arkham Knight. So it could be confusing, and it would make sense, you would think, based on the trailer, oh, this is just a continuation of the Arkham series. It's not. I will say this, though. One of the DLCs, there were two DLCs that came out with Arkham Origins, the game that was developed by the same development studio that's done this Gotham Knights game. One was called A Matter of Family, which was centered on Batgirl, and one called Cold Cold Heart, who was centered on Mr. Freeze. The Cold Cold Heart was essentially Mr. Freeze's origin.
Great Hank Williams tune, by the way.
Yes, and really, really cool that the closing credits to Arkham Origins is Joker singing Cold Cold Heart.
That's pretty amazing.
But singing it more in a crooner's Frank Sinatra style than he was. But regardless.
Well, we all know Mark Hamill can sing. I mean.
Mm-hmm. But that was Troy Baker. This is Troy Baker singing it in this one.
Oh,
but
okay.
Regardless. But remember, like you just said, Mark was like, was I younger and drunk when I did this? Because Troy Baker did a much better job in that game sounding like Mark Hamill's Joker than Roger Craig Smith did sound like Kevin Conroy's Batman. But I digress.
Right. And really, one other thing that's worth mentioning when you talk about Troy Baker is the Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles crossover. They made that into a DVD movie. Troy mm-hmm. Baker does double duty. He does Joker right. and he does Batman in that. So
Right. But my point being is this is not the first time that WB Montreal Games has played around with Batgirl and Mr. Freeze. We know they've and Robin too, because Robin is also in the Matter of Family DLC. It is essentially the story is Batgirl and Robin having to rescue Commissioner Gordon, who's been kidnapped by the Joker and Harley on an abandoned amusement park in the middle of Gotham Harbor. So that's the storyline to that DLC, which I actually kind of liked. But the game, the biggest thing that I got out of it, being a big, big player of those games, it does seem like they have kept some of the stuff that was popular from the Arkham games, but tweaked them a little bit. It looks like there's elements of the fighting system, which is probably the biggest groundbreaking thing to come out of the Arkham games, to the point where you have games like Shadow of Mordor now, where they just straight up stole the fighting system, that free flow fighting system. Doesn't look like from the gameplay footage they had, because there were two trailers on this. There was a reveal trailer and then a gameplay trailer. And granted, they did say it was pre-alpha, so I mean, there could be a lot that changes. There's not going to be that combo meter there was before, but it still seems like it's all about timing and stuff, which is kind of the essential concept of the free flow fighting. They also, this is going to be cooperative, which you've never had before. Arkham games have always been standalones, and even in the later games like Arkham Knight and the DLC Matter Family, you would have two characters, but you would switch. You could switch in the middle of fighting between Robin and Batgirl. This one, there is going to be co-op play, but it's only going to be online. You're not going to be able to play on the same console with a split screen. Unfortunately, but they also said that you're going to be able to play it solo as well, if you want to do it that way. And the whole idea was to allow you to have more of a role playing aspect and develop each one of the characters however you wanted to, that best suited your playing style. Not so sure if I'm jazzed about that, because I always thought, whether it was WB Games, Montreal Games, or Rocksteady, which we'll get to their game reveal here in a little bit, the other developer of the other three Arkham games, did a really good job at delineating between all the different characters that are brought in and how their fighting styles are a little different. Tim Drake's is different than Dick Grayson Nightwing. Jason Todd's Red Hood's a little different. Bruce's is different. Catwoman. There's a multitude of characters that you'll be able to play as throughout the course of those four games. And I thought they did a really, really good job at kind of just being a big Batman fan, giving them all different personalities and different fighting styles that suit their personalities. With an RPG, you can kind of just make, what, if you want to build the tree the right way, I guess you could make all four of them exactly the same. And I don't know if I'm really jazzed about that concept.
Right. You could make Batgirl the tank or some wacky thing like that.
Right. So, but I'm glad to see they brought Red Hood in. I think he's kind of become a fan favorite. I think as time has passed, a lot of comic fans realized that voting to kill off Jason Todd was just really not cool. That was, I think it was it Denny O'Neill that said that was like the darkest day in comic history, in his opinion, because it just made comic fans like jerks or something. You know?
Well, it's still made for one of the best scenes in Batman history, in the Under the Red Hood, where Jason kicks over the door and says, "Look, I forgive you for not saving me, Bruce, but why on God's earth is he still alive?
Is he still alive?
That
is just
fantastic storytelling right there.
Of course, this game drops next year in 2021. Of course, I will buy it. It's a day one. No questions asked.
Agreed.
Probably one of those games. The Arkham series is my favorite. My favorite video game is probably Red Dead Redemption 1, but closely followed by flip a coin, any of the Batman Arkham games, with Knight probably being my least favorite. I really love Arkham Asylum and Arkham City. And I think Arkham Origins is very underrated. I will be there, and it will probably be like I did with all four of those games. I probably will take a vacation day of the day because I will go get it at midnight when it's available, knowing I'm not going to go into work the whole next day because I'm going to be just grinding, you know. I'm thinking if you're going to build four characters and it's as long a story as all the other games have been, and they're saying there's going to be an individual storyline for all four of the Bat family, it's probably going to be you're looking at 120 hours probably of time, because I'm figuring at least 8 to 10 hours for each character. That's 40 hours right there. And then if you want to get into everything else, it did look like from the trailer. We know that Mr. Freeze and the Court of Owls are a bad guy. There was one quick scene that looked like there was a riddle or a puzzle involved, which makes me wonder, oh my God, does that mean more Riddler trophies? Because if anybody's played the Arkham games knows, they either you love them or you hate them, because they're literally everywhere. And with each succeeding game, it's like, really? Come on, guys. There's no way Edward Nygma had this much time to hide them, this many of these damn things.
All over. Because you got to get three things to line up just so it forms a question mark.
You didn't play the later games. It got worse, dude. It got way worse. It got way. By the time you got to Arkham Knight, I think there's in the first game at Arkham Asylum, there's like, I think 70 something or 60 something of them. By the time you get to Arkham Knight, there's like over 300.
Too much time for me.
And about half of them involve the Batmobile, which that's another soapbox for another day, the overuse of the Batmobile. I did find that cool. There, it looks like you're going to be able to use the Bat Cycle in this game, which is probably a little better than the Batmobile. I mean, it was Batman Arkham Knight at times felt like Batman World of Tanks. I mean, it really did. It really did. So
I never got into World of Tanks, but I really want to, especially since there's a Sergeant Slaughter tank now. That just seems perfectly appropriate.
Consider this is going to be a deep dive for our older listeners. Considering one of my first arcade games is Battlezone. I was
yes. Thank you. Thank you.
And it was an Atari game that had
multiplayer Battlezone.
Yes, and it had old school pixelation, but it was a tank simulator essentially. But like I said, that's a deep dive for our older listeners. You younger listeners won't know what we're talking about. They actually had these places at malls called arcades, and you actually had to put a quarter in the machine. But I digress. So I'm really excited about Gotham Knights. I will be interested to see, simply because it's not canon, and I wonder how many people are, or at least, it's not saying it's not canon, it's not in the Arkham canon. I wonder how many people, even though this is a year away, are going to go into it thinking this is a continuation from Arkham Knight, and it's not. They've openly said it's not, so we'll see.
All right, moving on from video games to movies, we did get the reveal for Suicide Squad. And this is where I'm going to have to lean on you, Train, because you're the DC guy. And
okay.
I'm just going by some of these names, I'm not sure either of us will know, but knowing James Gunn, that's kind of why he's going towards these second, third, maybe even fourth string villains. So the big news coming out of the Suicide Squad panel from DC Fandom was the cast. We knew the cast of actors. We didn't know what roles they were playing. Now, some of these are easy, so we'll run down the list here. Margot Robbie, Harley Quinn. We don't need to talk about her. She's already had two movies. Idris Elba as Bloodsport, because the theory that I had was he was going to take over Will Smith as Deadshot. And then I heard the theory that he was going to be Bronze Tiger, but he's Bloodsport. So what can you tell us about Bloodsport?
Bloodsport, there's been recently a third Bloodsport that's popped up in the last, I'd say, 2 years in DC
Comics.
And
we're not talking the Jean-Claude Van Damme Bloodsport, right?
No. Okay. The original Bloodsport, I want to say, when did he come out? 70s, I want to say. But there have been two of them. They were both African-American. The first one was named Robert Dubois. He's a Vietnam vet who has a mental breakdown because of the war. He's an expert boxer, and he winds up getting hired by Lex Luthor to take out Superman. And Lex, of course, equips him with all kinds of kryptonite weaponry, including bullets. But there was a crossover, when they brought the second guy, and I cannot remember his real name. The two of them wind up having a boxing match at, I want to say, Belle Reve, but it wasn't Iron Heights, and it wasn't. Oh, what's the other one? Not Arkham Asylum, not Belle Reve. Begins with a B. It's the normal prison in Gotham. Anyway, I think they wind up fighting in Belle Reve, which Belle Reve is essentially the Raft in DC. It's where supervillains go. They have the facilities there to house like Mr. Freeze or Killer Croc and those kinds of Blackgate. That's it. Sorry, Blackgate Prison, Blackgate Penitentiary. It's not Blackgate. It's not Iron Heights. I think it's Belle Reve. But they have a fist fight. So I don't want to say he's Deadshot, but you get the idea. He's an ex-soldier. Same kind of training. But he has obviously a little bit more PTSD which they did not bring up in the original, the Will Smith. Floyd Lawton, which is, of course, the real name of Deadshot, he also has a lot of PTSD, too. His brother died, and that's his backstory, that character. Deadshot, to me, is one of those characters that made sense in the Suicide Squad because he could be easily turned from a villain to an anti-hero.
And that's something Will Smith played very well, because I remember, if you go back, we did this show when the casting was announced, three or four years ago, about Suicide Squad. And I cut that promo saying, are we going to get the serious acting Will Smith, or are we going to get the hell nah Will Smith? And we got the serious acting Will Smith. I thought he was very good in that.
He was one of the strong points. I mean, Suicide Squad was a very schizophrenic movie. There were parts of
it. I think it was meant to be.
it was very good in certain parts, and other parts you're kind of like, what? Mm-hmm. But one of the strong suits was definitely Will Smith. DC, for whatever reason, does better at having villains, I think. And I think everybody agrees. Marvel has the better heroes. DC has the better villains. We've always said that.
Right.
Maybe that's the reason why DC has so many interesting villains that are easy to turn into an anti-hero, like a Black Adam. Like a Deadshot, like a Deathstroke. They're just very easy. You don't have that in Marvel, you know. If they're an anti-hero, they're an anti-hero from the jump, like Punisher or Wolverine, you know. Right. So
maybe Venom is the possible exception. Maybe.
Right. Maybe. And even there, when you look at his offspring of Carnage, Carnage is never going to be an anti-hero. Carnage will always be a villain because he's Venom to like the billionth level, you know. So
right.
So next character.
Joel Kinnaman as Rick Flagg, because was that character in the first one? I thought that was
Rick Flagg is the guy who, he was the one that was supposed to be originally Tom Hardy, but he had to back out. So Joel Kinnaman played him in the first movie. He is the actual army guy that is tied to the Suicide Squad.
Okay.
You know, and he is a real comic book character. And in the movie, they had him as the boyfriend of Enchantress, which is not from the comics, you know.
Right.
They wrote that for the movie. But he essentially he's a poor man's Nick Fury.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
And he is in the comics. He's just a badass. Mm-hmm. He doesn't like Amanda Waller, but she's in charge, and he's a soldier, so he follows orders.
And that is a very good babyface name, quite frankly, Rick Flagg.
I mean, he goes all the way back to the 50s. Shocker.
right.
It has that Silver Age kind of sounding name, doesn't it?
Right. So we don't have to talk about him. Viola Davis, she's reprising the role of Amanda Waller.
She was excellent in the first. Yeah, so.
They really brought out the heartless element of her. Oh, she's able to just shoot somebody in cold blood. And to me, that in the comics, I mean, I physically read it in the comics. Amanda Waller is able to literally talk down to Lex Luthor and get away with it. Think about that for a minute.
I remember when they first cast the first Suicide movie, I was praying they were going to cast CCH Pounder because she voiced the animated.
Fantastic and I'm like, cast.
You're looking for a little bit heavier set, middle-aged African-American woman. Why not get CCH Pounder? She's perfect. But they didn't. And when I found out it was Viola Davis, I'm like, okay, she's a fine replacement. I was happy with that cast.
Happier than that than Oprah Winfrey, that's for sure.
Now, Oprah can't Oprah really be mean. Oprah's like America's. I mean, you'll get a card. Everybody loves Oprah. Come on.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, we know. We've seen The Color Purple. We know she can act. That's not the point, right?
Right.
It's just.
Can she make us hate her?
Right. And a lot has happened with The Color Purple and where Oprah is now as far as pop culture is concerned. So it would be a daunting task to say the least. But my favorite Amanda Waller moment, which is along the line of yours, is from the old Justice League Batman Beyond animated series when Batman says to her that makes her mad, and she just looks at him. She says, "And how you been spending your nights, rich boy?" She actually shocked Bruce Wayne / Matt. He's like, "Oh crap, she knows who I am." The look on Bruce's face, I'm going, that's how badass Amanda Waller is. She's cold as ice. She's an ice queen.
Right. Moving on, I'm gonna mispronounce some of these names, but Flula Borg as Javelin, who I think was Javelin Man, going back to earlier in the DC days.
Javelin Man became Javelin. I can't remember when I believe they switched the gender in the comics too. Generic former German, I think post Nazi Germany. I'm thinking like post World War II Germany, but former German Olympian athlete threw the javelin. Woo, shocker there. Kind of think their version of think DC's version of Bullseye.
Okay, makes sense. Well, then Mei Ling Ning as Mong Gal. Now, when I first saw Mongal, I thought, okay, are they making Mongol into a woman? Because if they're doing that, then that's severely overpowering things, because Mongol's on that list of characters that I say can make Superman say ow.
Yes.
And so I don't know about Mongal, but
Mongal's Mongol's sister. You were close.
Okay.
So just a female version of Mongol, which to kind of lend credence to what you were talking about with Mongol making Superman say ouch. I do love that wonderful episode of I can't remember if it was Justice League or Justice League Unlimited, where they did the man who has everything, and when Clark finally gets that black orchid off of his face that's causing him to have this dream, and he realizes it's Mongol, and he tells Mongol, "What my problem is, I'm always having to hold back, but I don't have to hold back with you, do I? You can take it." That's how badass Mongol is, and this is the female version of him, if that gives you any idea. Obviously. Going to be one of the tank characters.
Right. And that episode, I mean, Eric Roberts was so freaking great as Mongol. I know it's just a voice role, but everything about that. And they put it to perfection. And I mean, I'm a Superman guy when it comes to DC, when he's got the Black Mercy and he's choking out Superman. And he said something about happy birthday or something like that. And then Superman just glares at him and says, "Burn."
Yep,
the lawful good Boy Scout just gives the Death Stare and says, "Burn," and just shoots point blank with the with the I-beams.
You have to remember Suicide Squad always in the comics has had a tank character. It's been different characters at different times. It's been Bane, it's been King Shark, it's been Killer Croc. They've always had a tank character, which we'll get to King Shark in a little while. I'm wondering why you got two tank characters in one. I mean, obviously Killer Croc was the tank character in the last one. I mean, isn't that comic book team up writing 101?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think of any group of supervillains and or superheroes. There's always a tank character. The X-Men have Colossus. The Defenders had the Hulk. Fantastic Four has the Thing.
Probably Thor.
They have Thor, exactly, or Hulk, depending on which version you're looking at, where in time. And DC's no different. This league, you got Superman, right? You've got the tank character. Lex Luthor, of course, has his exoskeleton because he's smarter than Superman, but he's got to fight him with brawn, too. So
that is one of my dreams in any DC Marvel crossover is an Iron Man versus Lex Luthor exoskeleton duel.
Okay.
But anyway, moving on, we don't have to really talk much about this. Jay Courtney as Captain Boomerang. I mean, he's been around DC here and there he's really kind of been a Flash guy, I think, if I recall correctly.
Right. Well, the thing about Jay Courtney is that the take that he had on, first off, he's Australian. So that was good because everybody knows Captain Boomerang in the comics is Australian. And he's always been depicted and animated with an Australian accent. So they didn't have to fake that. But the take he had in the original Suicide Squad movie was very different than the Captain Boomerang from the comics.
Mm-hmm.
They're both kind of jackasses, but in different ways. Oh, what a lot of people who aren't DC fans don't know is Captain Boomerang seems like a silly villain, and he kind of is. He's a Silver Age guy who was originally a Flash villain. And Flash, for what it's worth, don't sleep on his rogues gallery. He has one of the best rogues galleries of any superhero character out there. He's right up there with Batman and Spider-Man, in my opinion. And they're the two top ones, in my opinion. But to kind of make him darker and a little more of a threat, they had him kill Tim Drake's father when Tim was in college in the comics. So it wasn't on purpose. It was an accident. But now he's a murderer. And what's kind of significant, because you have to realize that Tim was the first of the three Robins to not be an orphan. Batman's an orphan. And then, of course, Dick was an orphan and Jason was an orphan. Well, Tim wasn't. And then his father died.
He made him an orphan.
So now he could relate to Bruce in a level that he never, and Dick that he never could before. I like Captain Boomerang. I think he's a cool villain, but I digress.
Okay. Now, Nathan Fillion, who is only known as TDK, I'm not exactly sure what that stands for, but a little bit of mini research here while we were on the air here. The detachable kid is what came up. I don't know if that rings any bells with you.
No. I mean, TDK for us DC geeks is usually just a abbreviated way of saying the Dark Knight.
Exactly.
So when I saw that, I was like, which, by the way, Nathan Fillion probably could pull off Batman. I digress.
Nathan Fillion can pull off anything.
And I've been wondering when he was going to get in one of these live action superhero movies. He's already done the voice in some DC stuff of the Hal Jordan Green Lantern.
He had a great line. It's probably to this day my favorite Nathan Fillion line was in the animated Wonder Woman movie, because he had the line of, because Wonder Woman talks about how Hippolyta, her mother, had an affair with Ares. And mm-hmm. So Steve Trevor, who Nathan Fillion was voicing, said, your mother and Ares, really? The whole God of War didn't throw up any flags? Dependability came up. Girls say, oh, I like you, but just as a friend. The God of War shows up, and right. It's, oh, hey, you're cute.
God, dependability, you're immediately friend-zoned. Nathan Fillion is one of those guys that is a James Gunn guy. We've talked about various directors kind of having that go-to actors and actresses they like to work with. Nathan Fillion is one of those James Gunn guys. So I'm not shocked that he wound up in a James Gunn film. Some minor James Gunn hit that's really, really popular in the horror community is called Slither.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of it, yes.
It's a horror comedy. Nathan Fillion plays the main good guy in it. And, of course, Michael Rucker, who was also a James Gunn guy, which is why he was in the Guardians of the Galaxy, was the bad guy in Slither. So I'm kind of shocked. I mean, I don't want to spoil step on it, but I didn't see anywhere listed where Michael Rucker's in this movie, which kind of shocked me, quite frankly.
Oh, he's in. We'll get to that.
Oh, okay. I was gonna say, I don't think you could do a James Gunn movie without him. Okay.
And Michael Rucker has hair in this movie.
Well, he's had it before. But two I can think of, one was a psychological thriller, one was a horror movie, but it just is what it is. I know John Carpenter has done movies without Jamie Lee Curtis and Kurt Russell, but doesn't it seem like every movie he's done has one of the two of them in it?
Right.
So it just, anyway, Nathan Fillion is one of those guys for James mm-hmm. Gunn, so was not shocked when I saw he was cast.
Right. So Pete Davidson, the Saturday Night Live standout, he is going to be Blackguard, who I have no idea who Blackguard is in the comics.
Blackguard? That's what you got me on that one too.
Okay. Well, we'll just
move on.
Hold on.
I've got my DC
to the Wiki Robin.
My DC encyclopedia here.
On the spot research here, ladies and gentlemen. This is the extra mile we try to go for our listeners here. We will do research on the spot to try to find stuff that we don't know about. And we are always open for correction.
I don't see anything in my DC encyclopedia, but you got to remember, this is an older one. This is from before the New 52. So,
and knowing James Gunn, this is probably one of those Timely or whatever comics that got preceded DC.
If you were to have said Blackguard to me before this reveal, I would have thought you were talking about the death metal band from Florida, but that's
it does sound like a great metal band name.
This is their death metal. Think Cannibal Corpse. Think they are the originators of the Florida death metal scene, but I digress. Once again, I'm the metal guy. You're not.
Yeah, right. So moving on, Michael Rooker will be playing Savant, who has long white hair. Does that name ring any bell to you?
Yeah. Savant is, I'm trying to come up with a good Marvel analogy for all these, because I know that's easier for you and probably for some of our listeners. I mean, the name kind of gives you away what his powers are, right? He kind of just is. I don't want to say Taskmaster. That's a wrong way to look at it, but you kind of get the idea. Savant actually started out in Wildstorm, which was Jim Lee's imprint. And that's why I don't know him that much, because he's one of those that they just kind of brought into the DC. Of course, for those who don't know, Jim Lee is now the current editor-in-chief of the comic side of DC. Mm-hmm. But he had his own run. We've talked about it many times before. There were those artist writers that broke away, the two big comic book companies in the early 90s, and Jim Lee and Tom McFarlane, and there's a few others. And they all had kind of
epic first issue of X-Men, not Uncanny X-Men, but X-Men number one, you know, which had the four variant covers. It's literally the top selling comic book issue of all time. Mm-hmm. That was Jim Lee. That right. Thing of Magneto chuckling as he's holding that orb or whatever, that was Jim Lee artwork. That was my introduction to Jim Lee.
Right. And all of them, with the exception of Image, which is Tom McFarlane's, they've all come back into the fold and come back into DC and been bought by them. And they've integrated all their characters. We've talked about this before on the podcast. Savant is one of those guys. That's what's like, I know that name. I wasn't that big a reader of Wildstorm. You were, though. You liked Wildstorm, didn't you?
Was Gen 13 Wildstorm, or was that Image? Because I think that was straight.
All I remember is Wildstorm, and if you Jim's art style, this a lot of his stuff was mech and guys with guns and really, really jacked up dudes. That's just kind of what Jim does.
I probably have a few issues of Wildstorm in my collection, but I don't recall seeking it out.
Okay, so there you go. But that's I was sitting there. I'm like, I know that name, and I know I've seen him, and he does have white hair in the comics. So there you go.
John Cena will be playing Peacemaker, which I think is hilarious because there is probably evidence going back to 2010 or so where I advocated John Cena being Captain America, because let's face it, all he has to do is take off his shirt and the ladies will probably like what they see. And he's got that look of the total U.S. soldier. But Peacemaker, right. Correct me if I'm wrong, Peacemaker in the DC universe is like if Captain America was an asshole. That's probably the best way I could describe it.
Pretty much. Now, you remember when we were talking about Watchmen, was it two episodes ago? Maybe it was last episode, and I brought it up before when we talked about Watchmen. There were all those Carlton characters. Carlton was a comic book company in the 50s, and they had been bought in the 80s by DC, and Alan Moore wanted to do something with it, and the DC people, the people in charge of DC said no, so he did Watchmen instead, and they're pastiches of Carlton characters. Mm-hmm. Peacemaker was originally a Carlton character.
Okay.
Peacemaker is, he actually kind of was bipolar. I won't say bipolar, almost schizophrenic, has dual personality. In his civilian guise, he is a diplomat for the United States who's always trying to bring about peaceful resolutions to problems in the world. In his superhero vigilante, he is the other side, and he has no problems with starting wars and regime changes to bring about peace, so to speak. And as they delved more into the character, once they brought him into DC, you find out that he's got repressed guilt because his father was the commandant of a Nazi death camp. So he's pretty deep character.
And I do think Cena will be able to pull that off.
Sure. And I do think that sounds like really deep by today's standards, but for stuff from the 50s and 60s, that wasn't that uncommon in comic books to give them they were just Nazis. They would really want to dig into the socio-political aspects of that in 2020, but a comic that comes out in 55, 60, 65, that's just a common backstory for a bad guy, and nothing else is brought up about it. you know.
Right,
so.
Right, absolutely. That even probably went into the 80s because in G.I. Joe, they had the Crimson Guard, and they were just, oh, they're G.I. Joe, but they're Soviets, so we must hate them.
Right,
it was
exactly.
The 80s and Soviets.
Right, exactly. I mean, it was just what it was. If you were a wrestling fan back then, there was always the Foreign Menace monster heel. For us here in the Carolinas, that was the Nikolovs, Crush Khrushchev. I mean, one of the most successful heel tag teams in this area in the 60s was the Von Brauners. They were supposedly Nazis. You get it. So
Right. So moving on, I'm going to butcher the actor's name, and my apologies in advance. David Desmalchian as Polka Dot Man. Now that, speaking of the 1950s, that sounds like a character from the 1950s.
Polka Dot Man is a definite Silver Age Batman villain who, probably because of Kevin Smith, Kevin's loves a lot of that cheesy stuff from the 50s in the Batman run, has regained a lot of popularity in the last, I'd say, 8-10 years with Bat fans. He is an interesting character. He's actually blind, but unlike Matt Murdock, he doesn't have heightened senses. He wears this crazy outfit with a cape that is a white suit with multicolored polka dots all over it. But he uses colors and lights to mind control people and to give them headaches and stuff like that. So he's not, there's a little bit of vertigo there. There's a little bit of, you get the idea. But he has a pretty cool story. And I can't remember exactly how he was blinded, but I do think he blames Batman for it, which is why, I mean, there are other characters that have not caught on from that era that were silly villains like Kite Man, which was essentially a guy that had a hang glider.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That was shaped like a kite. But Polka Dot Man is one of those Silver Age Batman villains that just fans. And Kevin Smith created Condiment King. That was kind of his homage to those kind of villains from that era.
It's a fantastic name.
It is. I mean, he squirts ketchup out of one and mustard out of the other. That's great. But that Kevin's a fan of that stuff, and he's been a big fan of Polka Dot Man. And I'm not sure, but I mean, Polka Dot Man hadn't been around forever. And then he popped up in a Batman story, I want to say in the 90s, and I think it might have been one Kevin had something to do with.
Would make sense.
So I think that might be where he kind of started having his comeback. Catman is another one. Yes, there is a Catman in DC. Outside, everybody knows Catwoman, but they don't know Catman. Catman right. Is, if Selina Kyle had an illegitimate child with Kraven the Hunter from Marvel, and you'd have Catman. Okay, right. I'll just leave it at that.
Now, I know it's not the same character, but one of the best castings for an animated series was actually in Batman Brave and the Bold, where they had Wildcat. And in the comics, depending on the Earth, Wildcat is one of the guys that trained young Bruce Wayne to box. And and Wildcat was voiced by Arlie Ermey.
Is he bad? He's not bad in anything he does, is he?
Oh, absolutely right. So you have Arlie Ermey essentially talking down to Batman, and Batman takes it.
Ermey is on that list of 7 out of 10 and can go no lower?
Oh, if they did a Nick Fury movie in the 90s, Arlie Ermey would have been a fantastic Nick Fury.
Sure,
talking
sure.
Before the Sam Jackson thing came along.
And contrary to popular belief, he didn't always play military guys. That was usually what he played because of his real life history as a drill instructor.
Because it stemmed from, what was it?
Full Metal Jacket.
Full Metal Jacket.
That was his first role, and he was cast simply because he was a real drill instructor in the Marine Corps. So, I mean, I think a lot of the lines in that, I think he just ad-libbed. In fact, I had a little discussion online with Dan Wilson, who, of course, is a friend of our podcast. He's been on both Classic Wrestling Memories and Examining the Dead. He was reevaluating the remake of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and I humbly disagree with him. I didn't think it was good, but it did have Arlie Ermey in it, which made it probably better than any of the other slasher remakes. That in and of itself made it better than any of the other slasher remakes. But, I mean, it's... Poke back to Polka Dot Man. I'm actually excited to see. He is actually one of those cheesy villains from that era of Batman that, in the right hands, both writing and acting, could be very interesting.
Yes, yes. Now, Sean Gunn as Weasel. Weasel looks to be like a physical weasel, so I can't help but think that this is like trying to be the Rocket Raccoon.
Right. Exactly. Of course, we've already seen a live-action adaptation of the Marvel Weasel done very well by TJ in the Deadpool movies. That character's called Weasel because that's kind of his personality in the comics. This one is, anyways, mm-hmm. Rocket, you got it. Keep going. Right.
Now, there, a lot of the rest of these we don't have to spend too much time on. Peter Capaldi as the Thinker. We saw the Thinker in, I think it was the fifth season of The Flash. This is definitely going to be a different version of the Thinker because it looks like he's a bit more hyper and all these thoughts coming to him, and Capaldi's going to knock it out of the park.
Yeah, I'm thinking a little more manic with him than depressive.
And I do think, and maybe I'm the only person in the universe that thinks this, if Disney reboots X-Men, Capaldi could pull off Magneto. Because I've seen enough in his Doctor Who and the dark elements that the Doctor has, because yes, the Doctor has those elements. He could knock Magneto out of the park.
The only problem that I would have with him as Magneto is he's not big enough.
Correct.
Magneto's
yes.
pretty jacked up dude.
Yeah.
I mean, Ian McKellen, as awesome as he was, is a little too small. Michael Fassbender's a little bit closer to the right size, because Fassbender's a pretty tall guy. So I don't know if you were familiar with a geek show that was on a few years ago. I had a run called Fringe.
I heard of it, haven't seen it, because I think that was some of Leonard Nimoy's last.
It was had a very X-Files vibe. It was about a secret government agency that investigated fringe science. So it was a very X-Files vibe. John Noble played this crazy character in it who was a scientist who had basically gone crazy, but he was brilliant. And I don't know who John Noble is. The way they portrayed that character in Fringe, what I remember the first time watching, I was like, this is like the Thinker in the comics. And I always thought John Noble would make a good Thinker. So Capaldi and him have similar acting chops. So I think Capaldi will be good in the role.
Absolutely. And because John Noble, I think, was Scarecrow in those aforementioned Arkham games, if
he
I
was,
recall correctly.
He was in the last one. He was one of the two main villains in Arkham Knight. He was the voice of it. The original Scarecrow was voiced by, I can't remember, it was one of those video game guys. That, and then the guy who did Jim Gordon, I can't remember who did him in the first three games, but the guy who did him in the last game at Arkham Knight was, I can't think of the actor's name, but he was in the West Wing. So anyway.
Okay. Anyway. So King Shark, played by Steve Agee, and we don't really need to talk about him. He's a Flash villain. He's been around. Ratcatcher 2, a female Ratcatcher, that will be Daniela Melchor. I'm not really familiar with Ratcatcher and his or her place.
Right. Ratcatcher is another one. They got a lot of Batman villains in this. Ratcatcher is mostly a Batman. The original Ratcatcher was Otis Flanagan, was his name. And you've seen Willard, haven't you? The old horror movie about the guy who communicate with rats?
Yes.
You got Ratcatcher. That was Otis Flanagan. And he could communicate with rats. And I remember there were a couple of storylines. I think they might have been Elseworlds storylines, where he was locked up in Arkham Asylum, and that was his only solace, was he could talk to the rats. They helped him escape one time. But they killed off Otis in the OMAC storyline. That was the one where Bruce had built this big, huge Big Brother, I think George Orwell Big Brother system, where he had all these satellites and surveillance stuff around the world. And it was, his main purpose was to just kind of keep an eye on everything on the Earth. But he had, because it's Bruce, had a secret hidden programming in it to also keep an eye on the Justice League for if it ever went rogue. Maxwell Lord finds this out and twists it around, and it winds up, part of it is it makes the regular human beings and citizens turn into these like Terminator type things. And when the OMACs first come to fruition and the people change, there's a very famous scene where several lower level villains are killed instantly by him, because they're scanning them and see them as threats. They're like a level 3 threat. Otis Flanagan was one of them, the original Ratcatcher. And that was the end of that character. Of course, that's the same storyline that led to Diana, Wonder Woman, snapping Maxwell Lord's neck, killing him.
Which I think is going to be in the third act of the Wonder Woman movie, 1984 movie.
Right, exactly. So that scene actually comes from the OMAC storyline. And if, like, Bruce doesn't already have enough guilt, you can imagine the guilt he has after the OMAC fiasco. Really, I just killed all these citizens, and that's the one thing we know. Bruce doesn't believe in killing. So I did not know that there was a female counterpart to Otis now, but it would make sense because OMAC storyline was about right before New 52. So I've been about, 10, 12 years ago. So obviously, it's just one of those characters. another thing about DC versus Marvel, we were talking earlier, villains versus heroes. DC can get confusing for people because they'll have multiple people filling the same costumed role. There's, mm-hmm. I mean, Green, right. Like Green Lantern. Well, you say Green Lantern, most people think, oh, Hal Jordan, or they think John Stewart. No, Green Lantern's a Galactic Cops. There's a ton.
It's a title,
right? There have been four Robins. There are five if you want to count Stephanie. If you want to count the girl from Not Canon from Dark Knight Returns. There have been how many Flashes? Five. I mean, that's just something DC does. Once again, that plays into what we talked about with Wonder Woman. When you have this comic book world that has the Speed Force and has the multiverse they lean on, it can get confusing. Huntress and like our Earth is Bertinelli, and she's the daughter of a mob boss who gets mad at her dad, so she becomes a vigilante. Well, the Earth 2 Huntress is actually the daughter of Selina Kyle and Bruce Wayne from that Earth, who get married and have her as a kid. You see how this can get confusing?
Especially with current continuity. Because Batman and Catwoman are expecting a child now, so. And there's a nice, cute little thing that I put up there at the Geekville Radio Facebook. Yeah, it is, Batman and Catwoman are expecting a child, so here's this kitten with little bat wings on it and fangs, like it's going, grr.
Oh, okay. But, I mean, so that's just, go when you go in, when you hear, you'll see that a lot in DC. You'll see the name of a character with a two or a three behind it. And you're like, what? That's just what they do. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, it happens in wrestling, too. So
at least they have tried to delineate all the Robins now. Of course, Damian Wayne is dead, but I think they might have resurrected him. We know about
everybody comes back to life.
And then the fact that, but you're the grandson of Ra's al Ghul, who Lazarus Pit. So I don't need to go any further. But for a long time, he was Robin Four. Now, I think he was before he died, he was just Robin. Because Tim Drake had become Red Robin, and of course, Jason Todd had been resurrected, and he was no longer Robin, he was Red Hood, and Dick Grayson is now Nightwing. So they at least delineate between, and for what it's worth, completely off topic, for anybody who wants to know, Nightwing, the name, has nothing to do with the fact that Dick Grayson was Robin. Nightwing is actually a Kryptonian character, and it was a story that Superman had told Dick Grayson. It was a story. It was like basically a comic book character from Krypton that Kal-El had learned about from the archives. And Dick just liked the stories that Clark told him. So when he decided to become his own hero, he asked Clark, I would like to call myself Nightwing in honor of him. And of course, Clark was honored and said, yes, that'd be great. Once again, proving Dick gets along and plays well with others, unlike Bruce.
Right, exactly.
This is the reason why Dick was successful as a leader of the Teen Titans, and at times has been the leader of the Justice League. Batman was never that, okay? Yeah. He just never was.
So rounding out the cast, this is going to be the longest segment of the show here, but Alice Braga will be playing Sol Soria, and I have no recollection of that name, although she's also going to be in the New Mutants movie as Dr. Reyes. So she's automatically got that role now of people who have been in both DC and Marvel. And at the same time, well, really not at the same time, because Suicide Squad's not coming out till next year, but you get the idea.
Right, and New Mutants is the last of the Fox stuff, so she's not in the MCU proper. You can say the same thing about Idris Elba. I mean, Idris Elba, oh my gosh, think about it. He was Heimdall in the regular MCU. I cannot remember what character he was in that god-awful sequel to the god-awful Ghost Rider. Please don't get me started on that one. They just completely just took a urination all over my favorite character. Nothing against Nick Cage. It just is what it is. But then, of course, now he's going to be Bloodsport here in the DC. So Idris is in really rare air. He's been in three different – He's a good enough actor. He can pull it off. But even he couldn't save the Gunslinger, which I was very sad about. But I digress.
All right, moving on. This has been something that has gathered a lot of traction over the last couple of years, and that is the Snyder Cut of Justice League. I believe it's going to be called Zack Snyder's Justice League is going to be the official name for it. And really, it's going to be presented on HBO Max in 4 1-hour parts. If anything, this proves that Disney Plus got it right. Don't release everything at once for binging. Release everything. Right. Release once. Because that's been Netflix's thing, is they'll release all episodes to stream at once. And here comes Netflix. And yes, there were people crying about it, but I'm like, okay, you're going back to when I was trying to watch Dukes of Hazzard every Friday night. If I mixed, if I got in 5 minutes late from playing outside, guess what? I missed those 5 minutes of Dukes of Hazzard. I didn't have a DVR to rewind and watch. So,
You're right. Mandalorian was the first they did with that, and my understanding that's what they're going to be doing with the like WandaVision and Falcon Winter Soldier as well. If Mandalorian wasn't the success that it was, I don't think this would happen. I think they would release it as one, because like you said, it the idea of the binging, it didn't hurt things like Stranger Things. It didn't hurt. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying, it didn't hurt the Marvel stuff on Netflix, Daredevil, Luke Cage. So I'm wondering what are you looking forward to this? Because I'm not so sure I am.
I'll watch it for curiosity's sake, because I will defend Zack Snyder when it comes to stuff like Batman or did the Watchmen movie, stuff like that.
Yeah. I thought he did good with Watchmen. I thought 300 was great. Those are both comic book, but they were lesser known comics.
But where I think we're going to agree here is I don't want him doing a Superman movie. He is too dark of a director to do Superman.
I got problems with his Batman because he made his Batman a killer.
Okay.
I know that's crazy because I defend Tim Burton's, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think the Michael Keaton Batman was as overt a murderer as the Ben Affleck Batman is. That's just my opinion. Am I wrong?
No. And to me, a perfect example was Batman Begins, where he tells Ra's al Ghul, "I'm not going to kill you, but I don't have to save you."
Yeah. And I've defended that before. If you understand the mindset of Bruce Wayne, he knows by letting Ra's al Ghul die, he's not really going to die because of the Lazarus.
He's going to come back.
Right. That's how it's kind of the same thing with, I have to defend Batman a lot when I get this argument I'm a fan of the no kill Batman. I have to get the argument, but he quote unquote, air quotes there, ladies and gentlemen, kills Solomon Grundy every time he fights him because he knows he's not really killing Solomon Grundy. He's just stopping him.
Right. I've seen takes on Batman versus Deadpool where Batman just beheads Deadpool and kicks his head down into the basement or something like that. Cause it's like, it's Deadpool. Right. He's going to recuperate.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So I don't know if I'm on board for this. I did not hate the mishmash Justice League. I think the most glaring problems with that movie were the ones everybody knows. The CGI on Steppenwolf was horrible. And it was obvious mostly through lens flares and the way they shoot things, the Joss Whedon shot stuff versus the Zack Snyder shot stuff. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But with all that being said, I didn't think it was the train wreck or dumpster fire so many other people thought it was. I don't want Zack Snyder's hands on mainstream comic book characters. The Man of Steel and Justice League and Batman v Superman prove that. He does much better with lesser known adult oriented comics like Watchmen, like 300, not with Justice League. And so, yes, I might watch it out of morbid curiosity like you're talking about, but I'm not looking forward to it. It's not like I'm going to like set aside the date on my calendar. Oh, wow. I've got HBO Max. I'll be able to see it.
All right. I'll put this out there. I've said it before. I think I even said it on the air in previous episodes that Henry Cavill does have a genuinely great Superman movie in him. It's just going to take the right director. And I'm hoping, practically praying to God, because of the deal that was signed in the last year or so, J.J. Abrams, I think, would make a hell of a Superman movie.
Sure, I think he'd make a good one. Now, I will say this, and you will understand the gravity of this statement coming from me, and so should most of our regular listeners. Henry Cavill, as far as the look goes, might be even superior to Christopher Reeve as Superman.
Yes. Yes.
But Christopher Reeve nailed what Superman is supposed to be personality, both as Clark and as Superman.
I still remember seeing Man of Steel in the theater, and there was that scene where he crawled out, or not really crawled, but kind of walked out of the lake or water or whatever, and I could just hear behind me all the ladies It's like the noises when you hear them. Oh, the lady's just swooning.
This where is this? Yeah, they're getting the vapors, as we call it down here in the South. But, clutch the pearls. Oh. But I think if you could take that acting of Christopher Reeve and put it on Henry Cavill's body, that is the perfect live-action Superman, in my opinion.
Yes, absolutely.
Once again, because of my age, Christopher Reeve will always be the definitive Superman. I've said it before. And that's nostalgia. That's with anything. I realize for my son, Heath Ledger's the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as I think Heath did a great job, that particular version of the Joker is not my favorite. So I'm more of a Jack Nicholson, Mark Hamill fan. Right. Hell, I even like Cesar Romero's at a certain level. So I don't want to see Zach doing that. I just don't think it's what his strength is it's the Justice League. And those characters are so iconic and so much a piece of American pop culture. And he, like you said, he just made them really dark.
Right.
And it's not who they are. And I'm not asking for him to be the old Super Friends cartoon from when we were kids, but I am asking him to be a little bit more like Justice League or Batman the Animated Series, something more along those lines.
Right. It might not be the best analogy, but to kind of make a crossover analogy, that documentary in 97, 98 about Bret the Hitman Hart and Wrestling with Shadows, where the whole struggle was Bret Hart wanted to be the white meat babyface, but yet WWE didn't think the white meat babyface sold, and they were going with the Steve Austins.
Well, if you looked at the receipts, then,
Right. But the whole point is you don't make Superman into Stone Cold. You just keep Superman Superman.
And I think there's some vindication, people with our mindsets, yours and mine, with how successful Chris Evans was playing Captain America in the MCU and the way the Russos approached that character.
Right.
Here's a guy who was all Captain America. He's milquetoast. He's boring. And then Winter Soldier comes out. People are like, holy crap, Captain America's a badass. But he didn't become dark in the process. So, yes, it can be done. That proves it to me.
Absolutely. So, speaking of dark, we will move on to The Dark Knight, the first trailer for The Batman. And it is worth noting, this is what is impressive about this trailer, is there's only been about 25% of the production complete. But yet there was still a trailer that gave you an idea of what the movie was going to be about. And right. I'll ask for your thoughts on the trailer, and then we'll talk about what's been revealed about the plot.
I really liked the trailer. It got me excited. I don't know, because I haven't done as much research into it as you have. I just got the vibe off of the trailer that looks like the Riddler's going to be the main bad guy. Am I wrong in feeling that way?
No, you're exactly right. You're exactly right.
It just seemed like that. I once again, I have defended the casting of Robert Pattinson from the get-go. I think I've got on a soapbox before here on the podcast. Those of you who are reluctantly against it, are you against it because he was in a franchise you weren't a fan of? Or have you seen his full body of work? I think the only problem I've always had with this from the jump, even though I've defended him, but this has been an issue with every casting of Batman, is it is hard to get a guy that is big enough and bulked up enough that is believable enough in the fight scenes, but has the acting chops to do the other side of Batman. That they don't grow those kind of actors on trees. And I will say that's why I was always for Ben Affleck when everybody else was crapping on it. I'm like, from a physical standpoint, Ben Affleck's going to look more like Batman in the comics than anybody's ever played him before. All due respect to Christian Bale and Val Kilmer and Michael Keaton.
I love Michael Keaton, but he's shorter than me. He's like 5'9", 5'10".
And Ben Affleck, he's a big, jacked up dude.
He's bigger like than six, me.
He's like 6'3", and like 250. And he's got the money and the time to get the trainers and get in shape like he did. And so that's been my only issue is Pattinson's not short. He's a tall guy. Say he's probably 6'1", 6'2", somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. He's just a very skinny guy. But he's an actor. He's a well-paid actor. We see what they did to Chris Pratt. We see what they did to Christian Bale. It's not like guys can't get jacked. I mean, some guys like a Chris Hemsworth, Chris Hemsworth's Chris Hemsworth. He's already a big old jacked up dude.
There's a reason why he's going to play Hulk Hogan.
Right, exactly. He looked, when he got cast, he just looked like Thor. So that was the only thing I drew back from it. What I drew the most from this, and it actually wasn't from the trailer, it was what I drew from the reaction to the trailer. And I've got friends in the camp of they hate Twilight, me the horror guy. They hate Twilight. They hate the sparkly vampires. And they're all like, well, damn it, Warner Brothers, now you've got me interested. Which tells you they're already going in with a negative attitude, right? And then I've got the other side of, I've got the other smaller group of friends that are Twilight fans, almost all female, shocker there, right? And they're like, okay, what do you Twilight fans think about this? And I've had to tell them all, if you go into this movie thinking you're going to see Twilight, you're going to be sadly let down. Because even the lightest Adam West 1966 Batman has nothing in common with Twilight. Nothing.
Right.
And if you go into it, it's what I tell people about sports, about movies, about music. I understand names sell, but you have to be able to ask Garth Brooks how Chris Gaines worked out.
good analogy.
I'll just leave it at that, okay? I think we all can agree, whether you like Garth Brooks or not, the man has sold a buttload of albums, okay? He is one of the most successful. I think he sold more albums than anybody else. I think he finally surpassed Elvis and the Beatles. He redefined what country music was in the 90s. He is a household name, and whether you like his music or not, you're not going to sit there and go, well, he can't play, he can't sing, he sucks. You just would say, I just don't like country music. And then he tried something different. I respect him for that, but how'd it work out?
Right.
You had rock people going in thinking, well, this is going to be a rock album. And they couldn't get the Garth with the cowboy hat singing Friends in Low Places out of their mind. And you had the country fans going in going, what's Garth Brooks got to be? Well, is that going to say Garth Brooks? It doesn't work. Don't go in with preconceived notions is what I'm saying. You know,
the best rock music Garth Brooks ever did was that Kiss tribute where he did
Hard Luck Woman.
Hard Luck Woman. That was fan-freaking-tastic. That's the best thing Garth Brooks ever did in my book.
Of course, Gene and Paul personally asked him to do it. They knew that he was a big fan. But anyway, that's the way I look at this whole Robert Pattinson Batman. It seems to me, based off just the reactions coming off of this reveal trailer, you've got two people in camps that have already made their minds up. They're already, we're going to hate it because we don't like Twilight. Forget that this young man's done way more than just Twilight. And then you got the ones who are Twilight fans thinking this is going to be him playing Edward Cullen. He ain't Edward Cullen in this. He's Bruce effing Wayne. Okay, and so you need to realize that they're different characters. It's like, come on, Samuel L. Jackson is Jules from Pulp Fiction, but he's also Nick Fury in the MCU. Very different characters.
Right. Now, regarding the plot, because Matt Reeves did talk a little bit about the plot. Obviously, he didn't give away too much because so little of the movie has been made yet. But this is like year one, year two in Batman's career. And the story is that there are a series of murders that are committed. And Batman is able to deduce from the victims and the situations regarding the murders and the deaths that this is symbolizing Gotham's history. Now, I'm calling it right now. You can call me out if you think I'm wrong. Even though this is supposed to be year two or year one in Batman's, I think they're bringing in the Court of Owls into the DC movie universe.
I would totally be fine with that. They're the hot thing right now in Batman. We just talked about that in the Gotham Knights game. And based on what I told you back when we discussed that a few minutes ago, doesn't that fit into what that idea?
Absolutely. Because the Court of Owls is all about Gotham.
Mm-hmm. They are the puppet masters that have been behind the curtain, so to speak, since Gotham was founded before the Revolutionary War. The
right.
Evil geniuses. Yeah. So, look. I think Batman, and correct me if I'm wrong here, has unfortunately become one of the most polarizing, well-known characters in all of movies over the last 30 years.
Mm-hmm. I won't argue that.
And it's sad because he is so iconic. And he's been around for so long and had so many different writers do so many different takes on the character that you've got all these people coming into every Batman property with a different jumping off point. And so I just think they approach everything wrong. My favorite summation of how you need to approach Batman actually comes from the aforementioned Brave and the Bold Batman animated series. It was the episode with Batmite, who is essentially the Mr. Mitzelplix to Bruce Wayne Batman. He's an imp from another dimension who absolutely worships Batman and always wants to see his favorite superhero in action. So he, with his magical powers, conjures up like these damn near impossible situations for Batman. And he's not, I don't think he's as evil as Mr. Mitzelplex. He's more impish, but just like a kid with unlimited power. And Batman always kind of has to put him in his place before he goes back to his dimension. He said in one of those episodes one time, he broke the fourth wall, very Deadpoolish, by the way, broke the fourth wall of the show and basically said, there are going to be many out there who are going to say that this is childish or whatever. And the character goes and says something along, if you had the long history of the character of Batman, you would know that there have been many different takes on the character, and this fits in just as well as any other take. I loved that. That's how you have to go into Batman. Don't go in with any preconceived notions about this is not going to be a Tim Burton movie. It's not going to be a Christopher Nolan movie. It's not going to be the Adam West TV series. It's not going to be the animated series. It's just yet another interpretation. If you don't like it, that's great. If you do like it, that's great. But don't go in thinking this has to be Christian Bale. This has to be Kevin Conroy. Don't do that. Don't do that.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
I'm sorry. How passionate I get about Batman and how polarizing it can be. Ugh.
All right. Getting back to the Suicide Squad talk, there was the Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League, and really all we saw was a full motion video trailer, but it's clear that they were modeling the characters after the actors, because it really looked like that was Margot Robbie as Harley. But it's a really intriguing premise, because the trailer shows Harley Quinn, Deadshot, King Shark, and Captain Boomerang, who we talked about before with the Suicide Squad sequel. And then in the final moments, we have Superman show up and brutally, like, fries to death a seemingly innocent helicopter pilot. Now,
he had just rescued.
Yeah. So I think we're probably thinking the same thing here, because the first thing you saw in that trailer was Brainiac's ship.
Yeah.
That makes me think Brainiac's behind this. So I'll leave the floor to you, since you're the DC guy.
I think, to get back to the earlier video game talk, remember I mentioned there were two studios that did the original Arkham games? This is the other studio doing this one. This is Rocksteady. They're the ones that did Asylum City and Night that most people consider canon. And they have been working on a non-Batman but DC game ever since they finished Arkham Knight. And there was a rumor for a long time it was going to be a Justice League movie. Or, sorry, Justice League game. So I guess we kind of are getting that, aren't we? Kill the Justice League.
In a way.
But they are using a lot of the voice actors that they used before. That is Tara Reid.
Tara Strong.
Tara Strong. Sorry. Yeah, Tara Strong. But Tara Strong, who I believe also does the voice of, I want to say maybe Raven or Starfire on Teen Titans. Yeah,
Yes, and she's one of the Powerpuff Girls.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Does a lot of voice acting. She replaced Eileen Sorkin, who voiced Harley Quinn in the animated series and the first Arkham game. She replaced her with the second Arkham game and has done her ever since. Done her ever since. Did her in all. She even voiced her in Arkham Origins, which was not a Rocksteady game. But that was Harley Quinzel. It wasn't Harley Quinn yet. It was pre-losing her mind. But anyway, she's voicing her in this. But I do think you're right. I think they're going after, with the way they've drawn Harley, a mix of what they've had before in the Arkham games with the Margot Robbie look. Right. It looks. I think you're dead on with your summation. This was exactly what I got out of it. It looks like Brainiac's doing some kind of mind control. And if you're going to do an anti-hero Suicide Squad game, where you need to have the bosses at the end of each level be challenging, Justice League's a good way to go as any.
Right.
And the fact there's multiple members of the Justice League, that gives you, as a video game developer, multiple levels with that final boss. That's just how video games are constructed.
Right, right.
I think this game's not coming out till 2022, so we have 2 years to wait for it. It will also be like Gotham Knights. I probably will also get it on the midnight the day it drops and take the next day off of work. I do think...
God, so I'm going to be 47 when this game comes out. Wow.
Well, I'll be over 50, but we won't talk about that. But I do think that this game will probably be better received than Gotham Knights. One, because I think Suicide Squad's a little hotter right now than the characters of Red Hood, Robin, Nightwing. And two, Rocksteady is, at least in the video game world for the Batman games, is more beloved than the one game that WB Montreal games did.
Right, right. I put them in the same vein as whatever the studio, was it Rockstar that made the Red Dead games and the Grand Theft Auto and all that?
Or they had three games that I liked all three of them, but they didn't become the franchises that Red Dead and GTA did. And that is The Warriors, based on the 70s cult classic movie, directed by Walter Hill, about street gangs in New York.
Come out and play!
Yep, great, great movie. Fantastic movie, but I digress. Bully, which is about about a kid at a private school.
Never played it, but I heard of it.
And L.A. Noir, which think about by the name itself is what it is. It's like L.A. Confidential. It's 40s, 50s L.A. cops. They were all great games, but for whatever reason, they didn't take off like Red Dead and GTA. And so I don't think they were lesser games, but when they were made in the life of Rockstar Games was right as consoles were changing to new generations, engines were being changed. So they do look less impressive on many levels to a video game player than Red Dead did or some of the GTA stuff.
I still remember when I was working at a major retail chain for electronics. Mm-hmm. And there was a kid that came up to me with I think it was the PS2 and the Xbox versions of the Activision collections, or I think it was the Acclaim collections or something like that. So it was Pac-Man and Galaga and all those. And he's like, which one of these is going to have the better graphics? And I'm like, neither one, Junior.
But I think that's what happened. And I think by the time Arkham Origins came out, WB Montreal Games had been around a long time, but they had never taken on a project that big, not a premium AAA title. Mm-hmm. And what people tend to forget is Rocksteady was a nothing development studio. They had never done anything that had ever been a big hit, let alone a premium AAA title, I won't go into a long story, but they wound up basically with Batman Arkham Asylum in their laps. Think about that. You're a know-nothing. Nobody's ever heard of you. You've never had a big success game, and you're given the keys to one of the most beloved pop culture icons and say, oh, make a good video game out of this. And they knocked it out of the park. And
probably because they knocked on the door of Paul Dini saying, okay, can you write this?
That didn't hurt. They were smart. They approached it. I mean, there was a guy. This is crazy. There was a guy, one programmer, who worked for Rocksteady, who worked on the first game, Arkham Asylum, who put over 500 man hours in, and all he was over was Batman's cape, making sure the animation worked in every way you would want Batman's cape to work, for the way he used it to stun people, when he would glide, how it would blow in the wind, how it would move when he was walking, how it would move when he was run. They put that kind of time into the game, and so by the time Arkham Origins comes out, they're two games deep. They learned a lot, but this is the only franchise they've ever done. This is not EA. This is not Ubisoft. This is not Bethesda. This isn't one of these big video game development studios that has a long history of having multiple titles that are successful. They've had one, the Arkham. So they're not getting far out of their wheelhouse of Suicide Squad, but we'll see. It looks good to me.
Right.
I don't know what you think.
And regarding the Arkham games, I mean, who didn't take delight in being Batman and just staying out in the shadows and doing that combo where you just grab somebody and tie them up and hang them upside down. And you do it one by one, dangle them through each corner of the building. And then you got that last guy left where you can tell through the bat vision that his heartbeat is racing, and you just throw a batarang to one side and he goes off shooting, and you throw the batarang to the other side and he goes off shooting.
Yep. And that's the thing. I think that if they apply that to Suicide Squad, it will work. It was even the marketing campaign for Arkham Knight. Be the Batman. Those, as well as I do, up until those games came out, there weren't a lot of comic book video games that were worth a crap. A lot of them were side scrollers that just made no sense. I think probably the best video game, comic book based video game to that point was the old, like, original Xbox, PlayStation, Marvel Ultimate Alliance.
Right.
And it was limited. It was a good story, but it was limited on what you could do graphically for that generation of consoles. Part of what made the Arkham stuff work was, like we said, they got Paul Dini, they got the great voice actors. They made you, for the first time ever in a video game, you felt like you were that superhero. I loved Marvel Ultimate Alliance, but realistically, except for their special powers, all the Marvel heroes kind of played the same. You could be playing with Doctor Strange or Silver Surfer or Mr. Fantastic, and they all kind of played the same. I mean, they all had the same light attack, heavy attack. You blocked the same. You didn't have that with this Batman game. You felt like you were Batman, and like I talked about earlier with the Gotham Knight games. When they started bringing other characters in that became playable, they made them different. So you felt like you were Robin. You felt like you were Deathstroke. You felt like you were Catwoman. They apply that to Suicide Squad, it's going to be a blowaway hit.
And it is worth mentioning that current WWE superstar and a guy who's been a great wrestler for 20 years or so, Samoa Joe, is voicing King Shark. Now, he's credited under his real name, which is Joe Sinoa. Hopefully I'm saying that right. But Samoa Joe is King Shark. I mean, that's a fitting pairing right there.
And you're exactly right. But you understand what I'm saying. It's like King Shark should play completely different than Harley Quinn should.
Yes.
And they've already had Harley. Harley Quinn has been playable. In fact, I loved her standalone DLC from Arkham Knight, where one of the mechanics they have in all the Arkham gangs is what they call detective vision, which Batman, little things flip over his cowl, and it allows you to see through walls, and you see who's armed and who's not armed, things like that. It's an X-ray vision, essentially. Harley's version, when you played as Harley, was called Psycho Vision. And when you flipped on it with Harley, everything, the whole like a filter came over the screen. It was all red and pink, and there was all this crazy writing on the wall, and you could hear herself talking to herself in her mind as the sane Dr. Quinzel. They nailed it. That's what you think. Because Harley, she's so crazy, she needs to be careful around squirrels because they're going to try to bury her head, you know? And if they apply that, which I think they've already got Harley down, let's keep that with Harley when you get to Suicide Squad. Let's get that with the other characters, and I think they'll have it nailed. I do think when all is said and done, just based on the having done three games as opposed to one, I'm probably more excited to play Gotham Knights, but I think in the end, Suicide Squad's going to be the better game.
I think so, too. So we'll round this out with the Black Adam talk. And again, getting back to the pro wrestling analogies, Black Adam, I mean, we've heard this for so many years that The Rock was going to be Black Adam, because I remember there was a poll by fans probably about 10 years ago that, do you want to see The Rock as Shazam or do you want to see him as Black Adam? And Black Adam won the poll. And I was one of those, like, look, The Rock would be a great Shazam, but he's a fantastic Black Adam.
Well, we were talking earlier about anti-heroes and how Black Adam was just one of those characters that DC was able to switch from a villain to an anti-hero, and it worked well. If anything about The Rock's wrestling career, even when he was a babyface, he was kind of an anti-hero.
Right. And most of his career, I think it's quite possible, at least if not the majority of his career, he was a bad guy.
He was a heel most of his run. He was.
There's a reason why Stone Cold beat him most of the times in their WrestleMania matches, you know?
Because WrestleMania, you got to have to send the fans home happy. The babyface has to win in the end.
Right. But the trailer didn't really reveal that much. I guess the big thing that we should talk about are the Justice Society characters that were revealed by Johnson himself, basically narrating in character. So we're going to be getting Dr. Fate. We're going to be getting Hawkman, Cyclone, who I didn't recognize, and then Atom Smasher. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Atom Smasher is basically DC's Giant Man, right?
Of sorts. Atom Smasher is kind of, he does get big, like Hank does, but he was one of those characters that came out in the 60s during the Cold War, when there was a lot, around the same time like Radioactive Man came out in Marvel. There was that whole, I mean, we've talked about it before, we've talked about Red Dawn. Unless you grew up in that era from the 60s to the 80s, you don't understand the fear of the Russians and us going to full-on nuclear war was real.
Right.
So he is essentially there. I mean, as far as power set goes, I'm saying.
Right.
But his instead of being PIM particles, I can't remember, but it has to do something with nuclear something or other, how he got his power set.
The only other character I have to ask about is Cyclone, because I don't recall. Is she another one of those characters that might have come in from...
I'm wondering if, what is that scientist's name? I'm drawing a blank here, but he was the scientist who created Red Tornado, who was essentially supposed to be a spy who was supposed to spy on the Justice League. I know you're a little familiar with Red Tornado, but he was an AI who developed sentience and decided to turn to switch before he killed him. Red Tornado.
He was basically DC's Vision, I think, in a way.
Right. He was, and I've heard the argument that that Vision was Marvel's answer to Martian Manhunter. I think those are both accurate, by the way.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So, because when you're talking power set and skill sets, they're all similar. But I do know that the guy who created, why am I drawing a blank on that guy's, now that character's name? But the scientist who created Red Tornado also created a female one and another male one. And I'm thinking the female was Red Cyclone. So I'm wondering if it's the same one.
Would make sense. Cyclone, Tornado.
And I want to say the other one was like Hurricane or Tsunami or something. They're all weather-based names. But I don't think you can go wrong in a movie when you cast legitimately the biggest action movie star going today. Look, we all know DC's not doing as well live action as Marvel is with their movies. That trumps anything that Marvel's done. Anything.
Absolutely.
And I'm not ragging on the big name actors they've gotten. We can agree. Scarlett Johansson, Oscar winner.
Brie Larson, you know.
RDJ. Well, he was kind of on the down when that revitalized his career.
Yes.
But I mean, Scarlett Johansson, Oscar winner. Brie Larson's Oscar winner. Samuel Jackson's an Oscar nominee. They got Kenneth Branagh to direct one, the first Thor. As the movies went on, they started Benedict Cumberbatch and they cast him as Strange. It was the hottest thing in Hollywood. They've gotten a lot of A-list actors, but The Rock is legitimately the biggest box office draw in Hollywood right now. Mm-hmm. And DC got it.
And he still took the time. I know it was probably green screened and all that and pre-filmed and all that, but he took the time to do this DC fandom and look into the camera and talk to you like you were his best friend while he was reading off these questions and such. And that's something I will always respect The Rock for. He has that charisma that he's able to look in the camera and talk to you like you're his best friend.
I listen to the Joe Rogan podcast, which obviously I'm not the minority. This is the biggest, most listened to podcast in the world. And he's a big fan of The Rock. And he always jokes, if you ever want to feel bad about yourself, no matter how good a day you're having, just watch The Rock's Instagram or Twitter, because he'll post pictures of him working out live. The dude is just a workaholic. And it's not just a workout. I mean, you can just tell the work ethic that man has is insane.
He still has time to play with his daughters and put the videos up there.
I mean, he's like, if you want to feel like you're really getting nothing done, just watch Rock for 5 minutes on his Instagram and you'll feel like I'm really wasting my time. And it's everything. He has time to act and he's a good dad and he's a producer, and you don't look like he does if you're not spending time dieting and working out. I mean, the guy, I'm wondering how much, he must only get, 2-3 hours of sleep a day? He must.
He probably could write a book on physical fitness and dieting and all that stuff.
Sure he could. I'm sure. And that's a lot of his genetics. It doesn't hurt when your mother is from her genetic stock, the Samoans, and your dad's Rocky Johnson. That doesn't hurt.
Just look at a picture of Rocky Johnson in his prime. And
you go, I get it. But with that being said, I mean, he's not just the work ethic. He, like you said, has a charisma so popular. Joe Rogan talks a lot about politics on his podcast. And of course, we stay away from that as much as we can on his podcast. That's not what we do.
Run away.
But he did joke one time. He was joking about our current upcoming election here in the United States. You got these two extremely unpopular candidates, just like it was in 2016. And one guy suggested, I can't remember who the guest was, he said, the bill that needs, this is a year, if any year was going to happen, that this needs to be the ticket that runs. And his suggestion was The Rock for president and Jocko Willick, who is a retired Navy SEAL commander who has his own podcast, as vice president. I think it was Brett Weinstein, who's one of the intellectual dark web guys, said that. And I was like, it's crazy, because you're talking you're talking what ifs, which is just fun. I might actually vote for that ticket, and I don't think I'm the only person that would. I do think if The Rock chose to go into politics, first off, I think he would be successful at it because of his work ethic. And I don't even know what the man's politics are, right? But I do think he's so charismatic, he would get votes just based on that, wouldn't he?
Yeah, I think so too. And there's, of course, the vision of him giving The Rock bottom to. I'll just let the listeners put
decide whoever.
Righty.
I mean, could you imagine the memes of like The Rock giving The Rock bottom to like unpopular world leaders like Kim Jong-un and stuff? I mean, come on. the memes would be endless. And everybody would be hoping that his speeches would end if you smelled The Rock was cooking. And that's just not how he rolls, but it is right. What it is.
Right. So I do have to ask, Dr. Fate, how do you mm-hmm. think Dr. Fate should be depicted on screen? Because we know the helmet. Who should he look like when he takes off that helmet? Do you have any ideas?
Voice-wise, they had Odette Fair voicing him in the old animated stuff, which I thought was dead on.
Yes.
As far as the look goes, you have to remember, Dr. Fate, all the power comes from the helmet. And it's actually an ancient god called Naboo, who is actually... Dr. Fate is Naboo? Just a vessel.
Naboo, not Nab. Okay. No, not Star Wars.
N-A-B-U. Not Star Wars. Not N-A-B-O-O. N-A-B-U. He's just an avatar. He's a vessel for the Dr. Fate. It's a human host. And he's depicted as an older British man in the comics. So pick a distinguished-looking British man with gray hair in his late 60s to early 80s, and you'd be fine.
Okay. Well, too bad Capaldi's already picked for Suicide Squad.
Yeah, Capaldi would work, but he, like I said, he's already in the DC.
I know it's only voice, but Tom Baker, just as a voice, would knock it out of the park.
Sure, he'd be fine. I mean, I'm thinking Ian McKellen would be fine, and then he could be one of those that's done both. If he was still with us, Richard Harris would have been great.
Okay, I can see that.
Michael Goh would be fine. And it didn't have to be British. It could be American. I mean, I don't know. Like I said, think of any distinguished-looking septuagenarian to octogenarian actor with grayish hair, and you could always dye their hair gray. Hell, I would be fine with Clint Eastwood. I mean,
Patrick Stewart, maybe.
Patrick Stewart would be fine. Just when he takes the helmet off, he doesn't have the same voice because Naboo's not in control anymore, and it is. But you do need, if you're going to do that character, you do need to have, at any point you're going to have to take the helmet off, you do need to have a different voice actor, in my opinion.
I can see that.
But like I said, if you want a good take on the character's voice for me, go watch the old Justice League, Justice League Unlimited, and Odette Fair voices him, and he was perfect. Because he's supposed to be an ancient Egyptian god. So Odette Fair, of course, is Israeli. He has that Middle Eastern accent to begin with. For those who don't know who Odette Fair is, and I would say where he's sleeping under a rock, for geek fans, he would be probably most known for the Mummy, the Brendan Fraser Mummy movies.
Yeah,
where he plays, what is the character's name? But he's the one of the leader of the Hajjai, the group that's job is to protect the city of the dead, not let anybody disturb the mummy's remains. With that, had like all the ritual tattoos on his face. That's Odette Fair.
Mm-hmm. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this giant sized edition of Geekville Radio. Thank you, folks, for listening. And if this is your first time listening, if you made it this far, then God bless you, because we're going on 2 hours here. But this has been Geekville Radio. You can find us at geekvilleradio.com, wherever you find your favorite podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, you name it, the podcaster of your choosing. You can look us up. Just look up Geekville Radio or find all of our plethora of shows. And do give us a subscribe, because I am always looking for ways to improve this show. Let us know what we're doing well. Let us know what we're doing not so well. I welcome any feedback as long as it's genuine. So please be genuine with anything you talk about. And the best way to help us is to subscribe. And Train, if anybody wants to talk to you about DC or Star Wars or anything we've talked about tonight, where can they find you?
I'm always available on Twitter at crazytrain_JB. I just wanted to say really quick, two quick things. It's already been a really long episode, so what does it matter if I add a few extra minutes? One, I want to thank any of our listeners that have been telling their friends and coworkers and whatnot to tune in, because I keep getting two or three texts a week or calls from Seth a week talking about how our numbers are going up. We like that trend, and we want to keep that trend going that way. not just here on Geekville. All our family of podcasts are going up. I mean, I'm expecting it now just about every Monday or Tuesday, a text. Wow, our downloads are up to this. Awesome, dude. We're heading the right direction. So we appreciate that. Keep getting the good word out there. The second, completely unrelated, We have often said, call us when we're wrong. We're not perfect. We're only human. We make mistakes. Sometimes we catch ourselves, and we want to always admit when we're demonstrably wrong. A couple weeks ago, when we did a tribute to several of the celebrities that had died recently, we did a long talk about Charlie Daniels, the great country and Southern rock star. And we talked about Fire on the Mountain. And I told the story that it was written by his guitarist for the Marshall Tucker Band, which is a Southern rock band. I was wrong. I got my story mixed up. It was actually written by George McCorkle, who is the flautist and keyboardist for Marshall Tucker. And he tried to give it to Charlie Daniels. Charlie said, no, y'all keep it. I think it would sound better if y'all recorded it. And that is what happened. So I was wrong there. I quoted the wrong songwriter. And as a songwriter myself, I want to give the proper songwriting credit to the wrong person. So don't ever be said that Crazy Train will not admit when he's wrong, because I was wrong there and I'm now correcting that. So I apologize if I misled anybody on their musical trivia knowledge there a few weeks ago.
So just to be clear, we're talking the man who did the flute on Heard It in a Love Song, wrote mm-hmm. that song, right? Okay. Yep, George. There you go. Yep.
Yep.
All right, that's going to wind it up for this episode of Geekville Radio, episode 266. Thank you, folks, for listening, and we'll talk to you again next time. Geekville Radio is not sponsored or endorsed by any products or services unless specifically stated. The views expressed by the hosts and or guests do not reflect the views of GeekvilleRadio.com, the Wrestling Brethren podcast, family, or any of their affiliates. Some media used in Geekville Radio is the product of their respective copyright holders, all rights reserved. John Cena and will be Pacemaker.
Pacemaker.
Let me take that back. That Pacemaker. By the way, in that Suicide Squad panel, I never thought it, but Nathan Fillion had an epic mustache. I mean, he was like he was like approaching Tom Selleck level of mustache. I didn't think he had it in him, but
well,
wow.
I mean,
so
facial hair is the thing now, right?